It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. I'm excited to share a new format on our show starting this week. We're going to break up our topics like a magazine rather than stick with one theme. So today we have three exciting segments for you. In the first, a military sports program here in Alaska that combines shooting and skiing. The Alaska National Guard fields a biathlon team, and while it's open to all kinds of guardsmen, it has also produced some national level athletes. And later in the show, something completely different. Urban snowboarding in Anchorage. We've got all these big mountains, so why do some boarders prefer city rails and stunts? We'll learn all about that and the key role filmmaking plays in that sport with a new video just completed about Anchorage urban boarding. So stay tuned. It's all ahead here on Outdoor Explorer. Well, in this segment, we're talking about biathlon, and we've talked about biathlon a lot on Outdoor Explorer, but this is a little bit different because this is biathlon with people who actually have used guns for a reason, that is the military. You may not know that the National Guard has a biathlon team, which is very active and travels and is really open to people who want to be in the Guard and want to practice this amazing sport, which probably our listeners know is cross-country skiing combined with shooting. And I have two guests in the studio with me today. Tig Nakata is a guardsman who is also a biathlete. Thanks for being here, Tig.
Yep, of course. It's my pleasure.
And Lieutenant Colonel Steve Wilson is the director of the Alaska National Guard Biathlon Program and deputy director of training and exercises here for the Alaskan Guard. Thanks for being here, Steve.
Thank you.
So Steve, let's start with just the obvious question. Why would the National Guard have a biathlon team? And we think of like schools and colleges and whatever having biathlon teams, but why a military organization?
Well, biathlon is obviously the sport of Nordic skiing and rifle marksmanship combined. And that skill set, being physically fit to Nordic ski and rifle marksmanship, are requirements for the military. And I'm an infantry officer, and we say in the infantry one of our main jobs is to fire and maneuver, and in biathlon it's ski and shoot. It's the same thing.
Yeah. So what kind of, how big is this program? And it sounds like it's really been around for a while and it's really sort of developed into something significant.
So it's, most of the northern tier states have a biathlon program in their National Guard, and at the national level it's executed or managed by Vermont National Guard, and most states have about a dozen members or so, and we compete at National Guard races and local citizen races. We also compete against each other at a National Guard meets. And so the size is probably 100, 200, you know, Nordic skiers and biathletes in the National Guard, the northern tier states.
Nationwide,
uh-huh. Yes. And then, of course, reaching down into the Rocky Mountain states.
And so these competitions you have, it's an opportunity for our guardsmen to travel around the country and compete against the other National Guards from other states?
Correct. So there's usually about 3 to 4 races. This year there's the Eastern Regionals are in Jericho, Vermont. The Central and Western Regionals are at Camp Ripley, Minnesota, near Little Falls. And then the championship for the National Guard championships in Soldier Hollow, Utah. That's where I think the Olympics are.
Yeah, so that's the sort of the big time spot. So, Tig, how did you get into this sport? Was this something you always wanted to do?
You know, I heard about it. I grew up cross country skiing, and my mom always said, like, you know, you should try biathlon because they would have that event open to kids at a ski for kids that they do every year at Kincaid. And so I always knew about it, but I never actually tried it. And then I joined the military, and I had no idea they had a program like this. Until I took the PT test once I got back to my unit. And my battalion commander at the time just happened to be on the Alaska National Guard's biathlon team. And, you know, he asked me if I ever skied before. And, you know, I thought every Alaskan growing up knew how to ski. So I was like, yeah, I've been skiing my whole life. And so he asked me if I wanted to do it. And I said, I would love to do it. And they invited me out to the regional event in 2014. And, skied there. I think I was maybe top 10. There were some faster guys and a lot better shooters out there than I was. And then I got invited out to the national event in Jericho, Vermont. And I didn't do that great there, but I was one of the younger athletes there at the time.
And I think the the coaches, the national coaches, are at Vermont National Guard, and they recognize that Tig had some talent. He definitely had the physical fitness. So they invited him to several of the development camps and to grow him, grow him in the sport.
So where are you at with it now?
So I'm in my fourth year with the program now, and kind of feel like I'm on my way out, but the program has grown a ton since I've been there, especially the Alaska program. We have a guy in basic training right now from Fairbanks, and then one of our top skiers in the country for the National Guard right now, he's actually from Kenai, and he's in Jericho, Vermont, training with the coaches as we speak.
Cool. So what are some of your best finishes or some of your sort of resume items that you feel proud of?
I guess in the National Guard last year, I won the sprint race at the national championship. So for me, that was really good, and it was an accomplishment.
Yeah.
You know? For other people, you know, it's just a stepping stone to greater things.
What's your best shooting performance?
Putting him in the spot here, but that's what it's all about.
Have you cleaned him?
I've cleaned one stage before. So a stage is just five targets at one time. If you hit every single target, they say you clean a stage. And so I have done that, but then I've also missed every target in the next stage. So
yeah,
there's ups and downs to this sport.
And it's a combination of the sport where it's about your speed as well as about your shooting, and then also about like calming down so you can shoot well. And so there's sort of three skills there, right?
Right. That's what makes the sport so complicated, because rifle marksmanship and Nordic skiing contrast.
They're
opposites, complement.
Right, yeah.
Correct. And trying to calm your breathing and your heart rate in order to shoot precise, it's hard to do.
I mean, that's very similar to combat, I would think, right? I mean, you can spend all the time in the world in the range, but then once you're actually in a situation where you need to fire your weapon, totally different.
Correct. Yeah. Your heart's beating, your adrenaline's rushing.
Yeah. So I'm curious as to the main purposes. I mean, one obviously is you want to have the best guardsman possible. But, I mean, it's only out of all the many, many thousands of people in the guard, the number on the team is not that huge. Is it also kind of inspiring the rest of the guard and sort of like having something that is an attractor and sort of a source of pride?
It is. So, you know, as I mentioned, most of the northern tier states have a biathlon team, and that kind of feeds the national program. And Tig is one of those that's on the development team. And our ultimate goal is to find those athletes that can progress to maybe the World Cup or the Olympic Games. And you're right, the Alaska National Guard, you know, we take pride that Travis Cooper from Kenai is an up-and-comer that might have that potential. In the past, we've had Jeremy Tila, a graduate of Service High, and he's been to the Olympics, I think, four times. And he was a member of the Vermont National Guard and represented the U.S. Army and Team USA at the Olympic Games. So it is a way to kind of show off our organization.
Seems like a huge asset for an athlete, because getting that sponsorship and that time to improve as an athlete is really, really hard. And even you talk to some of our super elite Nordic skiers in Alaska who go and ski the World Cup in Europe, they're eating ramen, you know, and they're just scraping by and trying to get local businesses to help them survive. And here you've got like one of the biggest organizations in the world that's helping you, right? I mean, that must be a big asset.
There's no other organization that will provide your Nordic skis, boots, poles, rifle, ammunition, and travel you to races in Europe. In fact, Tig, tell some of the places you've got to visit.
Yeah, and actually right before I do that, I was going to say that's a great point, because on the National Guard biathlon team, you're fully supported. You're getting paid the entire time that you're on the team, and so we don't have to worry about what we're going to eat next, because they pay us for food, you know? And so, you know, I've competed against these guys that go to the Olympics, and they're on the World Cup team, and I've talked to some of them. They're like, okay, yeah, maybe next year I'll do it if I have the money to do it.
Yeah.
And to me, it's like I haven't had that problem ever, because I've been in the National Guard the entire time, and I've just had that support behind me.
Yeah.
So as far as travel goes, it was pretty cool. My first year, I went to Canmore in Canada, and that is the most beautiful place in the world, and it's my favorite place to go. And I'm actually headed there in a couple weeks. And then I went over to Sweden for the World Military Championships, where they had guys from the French national team, the Swedish national team, you know, Switzerland's national team. You know, everybody was there.
Wow.
And so you got to compete against these guys you see on TV, or, you know, here in the U.S., we watch them on YouTube.
Right, right.
We don't have those channels, but... And so it was really cool. You get to meet these guys that...
And it's a huge sport over there, right? It's like, for us, it would be...
The biggest televised winter sport in Europe. So, you know, it's huge over there.
Uh-huh.
In fact, they
how
say...
How do they treat... Are they welcoming, in, like, to an American team? I mean, do they, is it positive?
They love us over there.
Oh,
in
cool.
Italy, we do a parade for the opening ceremony and closing ceremony, and everybody's just like, oh, the USA, United States of America, and they're all cheering and clapping for us, and it's awesome. It's a great environment, and... You just feel really proud to be a soldier in the United States military.
Yeah, and also just as both as a U.S. patriot and also as an Alaskan, right? That we're contributing something here that's pretty special.
For sure. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. It's Outdoor Explorer. We are talking today about biathlon in the military. The National Guard, Alaska National Guard, has a biathlon team, and as you've heard, these athletes are going all over the world and representing us, and. Really not without us, most people knowing about it. I mean, this is really a well-kept secret. And my guest in the studio, you're just hearing from Tig Nakata, who's one of the athletes, and Lieutenant Colonel Steve Wilson, who directs the program and is also Deputy Director of Training and Exercises. I'm hearing that this program has been growing and more athletes getting involved. And sort of what's happening with that, Steve? What's sort of the trajectory for what you're up to?
Well, I think part of the is we've just got people like Tig and Travis Cooper and Everett Darrow who've gone to some of these junior races and have seen guardsmen and they see the opportunity. They're strong young kids that want to continue an athletic career after high school, and this is an opportunity to do that. And I think a common theme is all of them love to travel.
Uh-huh.
And so they're getting to see some beautiful locations. So they see that opportunity, and now they're signing up and joining to do biathlon. It's, you know, just a great program.
So more volunteers. Is there a budgetary sort of issue like here, like how many you can take or anything like that? I mean, how does that all work through?
So the program has a budget, but it's right now I have fewer people that can have the time to participate than I can take to one of the regional meets.
So you've got capacity.
I do have capacity,
uh-huh.
Yes.
Neat. So what is the military, maybe this is a good one for you, Tig, because you've actually experienced it. What is the military component of what you do? Because, I mean, you're not skiing all the time, right? Or is it like 100% skiing?
I'll say it's about 85% skiing and biathlon
uh-huh.
training.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, this summer I think I was here for 2.5 months, maybe 3 months, and so I actually got to do part of my military job. And in the military, I'm in communication, so radios and computers and all of that stuff. And so I actually got to train up on my military job, which is fun because you like to feel like you're actually in the military, and sometimes I kind of forget that, and I'm like, oh,
right.
I'm just an athlete right now, you know.
Uh-huh.
So it's fun and it's cool to put on the uniform every once in a while and actually do your military job.
Yeah. How do you see this progressing in your life? I mean, being an elite athlete doesn't last forever, though probably you probably have a few more years of that. I mean, do you see like continuing a military career, or how do you see this sort of working through your life?
Definitely. And my contract is actually almost over, and so I'm going to have to re-enlist here pretty soon. But I'm definitely going to stay in the military. It's something I didn't think I would like, and I found out that I really do like it.
Uh-huh.
And so yeah, after I'm done with biathlon, I'm just still trying to think of what I'm going to do, but either go to school or do something else in the military.
Yeah.
For sure.
So tell me, just from the point of view, I mean, it's not like an outdoors question, but for other young people who might be thinking about whether they want to go into the National Guard, what do you like about it? What makes you say that, yeah, I like this as a career, I want to keep with it?
I like all the opportunities that it opened up for me. It was kind of a different military career, I'd say, than most people. I came in and in the military, I was very physically fit. Might not look like it, but...
Because you'd already been a skier, right? You'd already been competing as a high school
kid. And, you know, I wasn't that good of a skier in high school. I went to Service High School, uh-huh. and I graduated 2012, but the years before that, Service was kind of, it was one of the powerhouse schools.
Yeah, I mean, if you're gauging yourself against the other skiers that are at Anchorage High Schools, you're gauging yourself about some of the best junior skiers in the country.
In the country, for yeah. sure, yeah. And so I was probably four teams down from the varsity team. Uh-huh. And so I think that's actually great for people who don't think they're good enough to be on the team, because I had never roller skied before I joined this team, and I'm a completely different athlete than I was 4 years ago, you know?
Yeah.
And then you have guys like Travis Cooper, who won a state title his senior year of yeah. high school. So they'll take people who just want to do their best and really want to focus and...
Yeah, you don't have to have...
foot forward.
The athlete doesn't have to have aspirations to a World Cup and beyond. For the National Guard, Alaska National Guard, at our level, we'll take anyone that has the time and the desire and energy and motivation, and we'll train them to ski and shoot.
Wow. So it doesn't have to be somebody who feels that they're a competitor. It could just be somebody who's like to give it a shot.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
What are your, what's your coaching staff like? I mean, how are you bringing up these athletes and enhancing their skills?
So we have some Alaska National Guard sergeants that are good skiers and good marksmen. We have a lot of good marksmen.
Uh-huh.
And we use those to train our soldiers. Some of our soldiers also partner with the local biathlon clubs. The Nordic Ski Association of Anchorage has Eagle Eyes, and so they get some training through those coaches.
Okay. Are you personally an experienced biathlete?
I'm an inexperienced biathlete.
Okay.
And a less experienced coach.
You're the guy who's in charge.
Correct.
Writes
yeah.
the checks, right? Or
yes,
whatever.
Sir.
So, what kind of facilities do you have for this? Is this, do you have a biathlon range and track and everything?
So the guardsmen that live here in Anchorage, we actually use the range out at Kincaid Park.
Oh, okay.
At the end of Raspberry Road. And then our guardsmen that are up in Fairbanks actually use the biathlon range at Birch Hill. That biathlon range is actually on Fort Wainwright.
Uh-huh.
But the trails are part of, I think, the borough. So it's a partnership.
I see. And so it's sort of like just getting on a bus and heading out there and all that stuff. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So what competitions do you have coming up? What are your sort of current goals for the program?
So we encourage our athletes to participate in these local club races that the Nordic Ski Association of Anchorage hosts.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And they have a little biathlon series, and Fairbanks also does the same. And then our next race is the Western National Guard Western Regionals, and that's at Camp Ripley, Minnesota, about 2 hours north of Minneapolis. And that'll be at the last weekend in January.
How many athletes will you take to something like that?
We can take up to 15, and then from those 15, the top 8 can go to the National Guard Championships, and that's in Soldier Hollow, Utah, uh-huh. and that's the first week in March.
So you interact with a lot of other state guards. How are they different or the same from our guard and from our team? Are we one of the best? I want to hear that we're the best.
We are some of the best. So the states we compete with the most are probably Vermont and Minnesota. Is that accurate, Tig?
And North Dakota.
Huh.
One advantage we have over them is we have better ranges, better access to the biathlon ranges. In Alaska, and I don't think I'm exaggerating, though a small population state has the largest Nordic population in North America.
We have more skiers than anybody
else. So we have a large pool.
The base of the pyramid, as they say.
Correct. Uh-huh. Yeah, we have a large pool of fast skiers to pull from, and we just need to make them good shooters.
Uh-huh. And in those places, I would think this is a really oddball thing. I bet most people don't even know what biathlon is in North Dakota or some of these other states, because, I mean, here, their skiing has become so much part of the culture of the state, and we have these athletes that go to the Olympics, and we hear about them, and they're heroes, and sort of everybody sort of is in on it. And we're having the national championships here in January.
That's true. Yeah. That's Olympic trials.
Yeah. Will we have any guardsmen who have a potential to go to Korea in the Winter Olympics this year? This coming year?
It would be a long shot. So Travis Cooper and Tig will compete in the trials. It's in Mount Itasca, Minnesota, the third week in December.
Yeah.
And that will select Team USA to either compete at the World Cup, or the next tier down is called International Biathlon Union Cup, or IBU Cup. That's the third tier, Olympics being the top tier. So that'll select Team USA to compete in those race series. And then, depending on their World Cup performance, we'll decide whether they go to the Olympics.
Right.
So both Tige and Travis Cooper are going to be there trying to make that team. So to be determined.
Tige, is that a real dream for you, or is that beyond your reach?
I'll say it's a dream. It's probably a little bit far for me, but I'm very hopeful for Travis Cooper. He's been skiing very well this year, and his shooting has come a long way. And so if he does manage to hit a few more targets than usual, then I could see him in the Olympics in 2018.
Uh-huh. Yeah. What is the, when you talk about, well, it's a big challenge for you, I mean, if I'm in a ski race, I know that, like, the other people ski faster than me, but in this you've got sort of this balance of skills. What is sort of, what's the challenge, or what's the, like, plateau that you're trying to get over?
Ski speed is definitely the deciding factor in this sport.
Uh-huh.
I know a lot of the guys, we all shoot about the same and miss about the same amount of targets, and so it always comes down to ski speed, and that's where I struggle the most, because competitively, I've only been training for skiing not even 4 years. So
right.
I'm not on these other guys' levels who have been on the World Cup and who have been skiing throughout college and high school. And so that's where I'm trying to catch up. And I am, slowly. And so to me, it's like, well, if I don't hit these targets, I have no chance at winning this race.
Right.
And so if I do miss too many targets, then in my mind I've already lost, and that's where I struggle, and that's where I've really been working to try to overcome that and be like, you know what, you just got to give it your best, even though you might not win this race or the next one or the one after that. You know, you're out here bettering yourself.
Uh-huh.
And that's what I love about the sport, and that's why I love the struggle that I'm going through right now.
It's such a psych game, isn't it? Right? Because you can practice on the range, and then if you are too worried about missing those targets, you're going to miss them.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And the past two races I did in Jericho, Vermont, so they say it's a random start list, but I started behind Lowell Bailey in both races, and he's a world champion. And so I would come into the range and see him hit every single target and leave. And to me, that's like, whoa, now I need to hit every single target. And that's not the way you should be thinking, because I came in there and I missed a bunch of targets thinking that in my head, when really I should have just been focused on the procedure and doing what I know I can do.
Trying to if you could clear your mind
and
just do what's automatic, that's the key, right?
You just got to feel like you're in training and not like, okay, I'm in a race, there's all these people watching me, and if I don't hit these, then I'm going to be in this penalty loop forever.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And precision shooting is it's always a mental game.
Right, it's something about like getting in the zone.
Right.
But I mean, you're a training a guy at the Guard.
Yes.
And I mean, we hear about military training seems to go on and on and on and on. Part of that's the same thing, isn't it? Like getting people to where they can do stuff without actually thinking about it. Is that sort of like?
It's very similar. And a lot of our soldiers this weekend will be, you know, firing their M4 rifles on the range, you know, from rifle marksmanship, and they'll go through some very similar training to get the heart rate up and try and create muscle memory and get in the zone.
Yeah, interesting. And we're pre-recording, so this has already taken place, but I know it's always happening again. How do you do it when, not out of the skiing context, but when you're talking about that kind of training where you're trying to get people, you don't want them calm, right? You want them to be able to shoot when they're not calm. How do you do that in the regular training regime?
I don't know. Can you speak to that, Tig?
I mean, for you, it must be easy because you're used to doing it on skis.
So they'll actually create stress shoot situations where they'll have the soldiers, you know, run and gun or run and shoot. They'll have situations where they'll be shooting in a shoot house, so it's real short distance with a target identification acquisition that they have to do quickly.
Uh-huh.
Most of our ranges have targets that pop up and pop down, so you have a short time to see it. So they create simulations that you know, stress the shooter.
They're all about creating that mental stress. So that you, yeah.
And along those lines, actually, before I even got into biathlon, I got into the best warrior competition. And that's what I feel like the most resembled biathlon, because you're competing against these guys who are the best guys from their units. And that created the stress for me and for them, because they're like, okay, I know that I need to shoot. Like, I need to shoot really well right now, and in that short amount of time, or I'm not going to win this competition.
Huh.
And so,
interesting.
Yeah, I always think about that when going back and forth from biathlon to my military career.
Yeah,
the best warrior competition is a series of military skills with a heavy emphasis on physical fitness.
I bet those guys are pretty impressive, the winners of that one. Yeah, great. Well, this has been fascinating. I've learned a lot, and I'm you know, convinced that this is a good thing for the National Guard to be doing. You know, some people might think, well, that sounds a little bit like a frill, but no, it sounds pretty core. So, and congratulations, Tyga, good luck with your winter.
Thank you.
Hopefully,
we
have plenty of snow and you have a great competition season. Tyga Nakata is a guardsman and member of the Alaska National Guard biathlon team. Lieutenant Colonel Steve Wilson, director of the Alaska National Guard biathlon program, and Deputy Director of Training and Exercises for the Alaska Guard. Thanks for both of you for being here.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Stick with us as Outdoor Explorer continues.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime as a free podcast in the iTunes Store or connect with us online at alaskapublic.org.
I'm Charles Wolforth. Our next segment on today's Outdoor Explorer is a lovely meditation on birdwatching, the work of birds, and what that tells us about our work and place in the world. The piece is by poet Allie Warren, and it's called Breadwinning for Birds. It comes to us from Poetry Now by way of PRX and the WFMT radio network in Chicago.
When I wrote this poem, I was living right across from Lake Merritt in Oakland, and there's tons of crazy birds around there. There's like storks and herons and things I don't know the names of. So I sort of just often would go there and sit and watch and observe. I do remember sort of hearing a little boy calling a seagull an eagle and writing that down in my notebook and sort of thinking that, yeah, I think you're right. Like, an eagle is a seagull. They rhyme. You know, so they're the same. Breadwinning for birds. They pay me to lift the ball off the bat, touch the slender hand, and slip beneath the top band. I plant bulbs and mulch the mound. I hone a group of black birds. I do the simplest thing in unison with the trees. People move as the sun moves. He calls a seagull an eagle, and I agree. Across the pond, they say I will. I know this is a problem for the painter, etc. Tell me where to go if they ditch me mid-season. Tell me a word seeks its world. Praise be to the upper lip of decision. Praise be to dumb clanking stems. Everything is alive, even you, floral loafer. That beginning there, they pay me to lift the ball off the bat. I'm sort of trying to describe in the most simple way possible what a baseball player who's paid millions of dollars, what they're paid to do. I think the poem both celebrates that, the power of what we can do with our bodies. You know, a farmer can plant things and produce beautiful flowers. But I think it also mourns how the division of labor makes us feel like I'm only a baseball player, I'm only a farmer. I think the poem's concerned with how words attain to the world or not. Like, what is a contract? Tell me where to go if they ditch me mid-season. Tell me a word seeks its world. Do the things that we say, do we actually do them? There's a way that I want all the things that me and my friends say about what we want in the world to actually come true. It's questioning or concerned with how that will actually happen. Politics can get so much in its own head and and its utopic or dystopic ideas about the end of capitalism that we forget that, like, we're going to have to live there with each other. And unless we want it to just be a sort of after the fall, then everything will be okay. I think along the way, we're going to have to treat each other well and remember to loaf and enjoy the sun and continue to be attuned to our bodies, the dumb clanking stems, listen to the mistakes of children when they call seagulls eagles, and go to the lake, and also maybe enjoy baseball.
That was Allie Warren and her poem, Breadwinning for Birds. I'm Katie Clarkson, and this is Poetry Now, a production of the Poetry Foundation and the WFMT Radio Network. For more about this series, go to poetryfoundation.org/poetrynow.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer, the Alaska Outdoor Magazine. I'm Charles Wolforth. You may have seen snowboarders scraping around staircases and other steep urban spots around Anchorage as if they were on skateboards. It's a subculture of urban boarding that is dangerous, youthful, transgressive, and connected by adventure and by video. A new film made by local boarders has just been released. Well, in the studio with me right now are a couple of guys who are in the boarding community in Anchorage, which a big part of which, kind of uniquely among sports, is about, you know, making videos and making images of tricks and stuff that you can do. And they've put together a new film called Evoke, which shows the stuff that their team and others around Anchorage are doing with boards, both skateboarding and snowboarding, which I found really interesting. I didn't see the whole film, but I saw a fairly lengthy trailer of it, and it's pretty amazed, and so decided to ask these guys in. Jason Borkstead is the owner of Blue and Gold Board Shop, has been on the show before. Thanks for being here, Jason.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
And Chris Marshall actually made this video, Evoke, and is also a boarder himself. Thanks for being here, Chris.
Yeah, thank you.
So, Jason, you've been on the show before to talk about the community aspect of this sport. You know, it's about a team. It's about people having a nucleus where they can be together. And it's sort of, you know, doing these, I don't know if the tricks is the right word, but doing these stunts is something that is like a group activity, right? If you did it by yourself, it wouldn't make much sense.
Well, I mean, there are plenty of times we do it by ourselves, uh-huh. but a part of the joy of skateboarding and snowboarding is sharing that with others. That sounds a little bit Christmas morning style, but really it's about the fun and the camaraderie of hanging out with your friends and enjoying that journey of trying to figure out tricks and being creative together. And uh-huh. That just naturally bleeds over into the video realm. If we can call it video anymore, I guess there's no real
tape. It's something about capturing it though, right? I mean, having it there where you could watch it and go back and see it and share it with other people online and show like, this is what I am capable of doing. And it's amazing. And I mean, that's gotta be a big part of it, which is maybe a bit different from what I do when I go skiing through the woods on my cross-country skis.
Absolutely. I mean, snowboard and skateboard culture have been based around videos from their inception, from the earliest times. The reason I got into skateboarding in the mid-80s, I think it was 84, was because I happened upon a Bones Brigade, a Pal Peralta video in the video store. Didn't skateboard yet or anything, but it drew me to that video cover. I asked my mom if we could rent it. We took it home, watched it, and I was just
I want to be able to do that.
Yeah, I want to try that. That uh-huh. looks really fun. They made it fun. They made it inviting. They made it seem like something that would be cool to be a part of, more so than baseball or football or anything like that.
And
that's what those skateboarding and snowboarding give to people.
Yeah. Well, tell me, Chris, you actually made this film. I guess we can call it a film or video, whatever you want to call it, right?
Yeah.
What goes into making a video like this where it seems like it's a lot of stuff you're putting together that are sort of different stunts and that people have done?
Yeah. Yeah, I think everybody that starts out filming for a part or for a video kind of has ideas of what they want, the tricks they want or spots they want going into it, and you just just go out when you have time and try and get the shots with them and go back and edit it.
Uh-huh. So you're not just gathering shots that other people have done. You're sort of planning them and setting up and actually filming them.
Yeah. Yeah, you usually have a plan going out that day of what spots you want to hit.
I just think that that would be... I've stumbled upon people doing this, and my heart goes into my... You know, I like, oh, my God, that looks so dangerous. And I mean, it seems like... And you do have some wipeouts, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that seems like it would be...
I don't. I'm pretty good, actually. Yeah.
You never wipe out. No, I mean, kidding. In the film. I mean, there's some wipeouts that you see in the film. And I just wanted, before we go too much farther, to get into the danger aspect of this. This is not safe to... And just for the listeners, we're talking about, like, guys... snowboarding down an outdoor railing, you know, or making these huge jumps from like one thing that to another that are not supposed to be jumped, you know. It's urban. It's very urban.
I mean people get hurt pretty often, but I mean, you tricks can take hundreds of tries, so those guys are hitting the ground a lot, but
there's no shortcut to this. You just go out and try it until you can do it.
I mean, usually, you know, these guys that like snowboarding, they'll ride snowboard parks pretty often, and they got handrails and stuff there. So they'll kind of have their tricks down and know what they can do, and then they'll think of a spot in the streets and try and take it there.
Uh-huh. Well, what are you looking for when you're looking for a really good shot? I mean, is it like something that's really outrageous? Is it something that looks really dangerous?
Yes.
Both of those?
Yeah.
Aesthetically pleasing. The reason that what Chris is mentioning is you do these things in the park, and the reason we don't necessarily go and film everybody in the park is because that's been seen by everybody every day that anybody goes through that place. And it's repetitive, and it essentially is boring to see. It's great to do it and enjoy it, but when you want to present your heart and soul and your skill level and your piece of art to the public, you want to do that based in a way that is going to inspire through the visual of it. And that can be through how crazy the trick is, what the background looks like, the awe of seeing a spot that's never been hit before, doing things in areas that you wouldn't normally see them. So the shock for you when you see this comes from thinking, I would never have seen that place used in this context.
Sort of like, why is somebody doing that?
Yeah. Right. And so to be able to do that, and I often liken it to, okay, if I was being chased for my life, I would be able to jump down this and go over this and everything, and you'd so be able to get away.
You know? Where can your imagination take you, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this, Chris, because we live here in Alaska. I'm going to actually throw this to both of you guys. We live in Alaska with some of the biggest mountains and wildest boarding that's available anywhere. And you've made a film about people like being in Anchorage, like being downtown and being sort of like skateboarding down, you know, guardrails and all kinds of crazy stuff.
Yeah.
Why do it urban? You know, why is this an urban thing?
Yeah, I think riding streets is just really popular right now, it has been popular. Uh-huh. It's really accessible for a lot of people. I think that's a lot of the draw, especially to people out of state. But everybody's into something. You know, some people like riding backcountry only. Some people only ride street. Some people like both. But it just happened that the people that had a large role in this video really liked riding street. There's some younger guys, and that's what they grew up doing.
Uh-huh. And I mean, Alaska, I guess we are an urban state as well, right? I mean, we do have a lot of people live in cities.
Well, realistically, the way we look at it is it's all snowboarding. Uh-huh. So I've been making videos or filming things since 92, 93, my last year in high school, and we were making home videos of that. And at that point, we were riding mostly at Arctic Valley. But in Eagle River, where I grew up, there's a overpass crosswalk, and it has rails all around it. We constantly spent time filming in that area because we saw things on videos that look like that. And we just thought, okay, anytime there's anything in front of us to snowboard, we're going to snowboard on it, and we're probably going to film it.
Uh-huh.
These kids that are predominant in the video, they grew up close to Hilltop and going there all the time. That's what is accessible to them on a daily basis. They can go after school, and so their riding starts to form around that place and what it offers, rather than somebody who maybe grew up in Seward, like a Darian Draper or someone like that, who's a great backcountry rider, because they grew up around those big mountains all the time. You know,
just wherever you happen to be and what kind of makes you good, what excites you, right?
Right.
Yeah. So it's Outdoor Explorer. We were talking in this segment about boarding and this new film called Evoke, which has been produced, and I guess it's going to be for sale at the Blue Gold skate shop and our board shop, and we'll have it on the trailer on our site at outdoorexplorer.org. Jason Borkstead is the owner of the board shop, and Chris Marshall is the producer director of the film. Do you guys get in trouble for doing this? I mean, do the cops, is it sort of like you're doing it in a place that is like a public place or a park or whatever, which is not made for boarding? Do you just have to have a lookout or something, or get ready to take off, or how do the police treat it?
Yeah, we get hassled quite a bit, but no, we don't take off or anything. You just try and be civil with them, and I mean, you're not allowed to be there, so doing that anyway, so there's no point in arguing. But a lot of times if you're civil with them, you can usually get a few more tries or a little longer, but ultimately we'll probably leave.
Because they like, I guess they're human beings, they'd probably like to see the trick themselves, huh?
Well, unfortunately, sometimes. Yeah, we grew up in a country that, or I don't know if it's necessarily our country, but we like to confine things to their space. You know, we want to put people on a basketball court to play basketball. All your sports are done on a field, with the exception of these freestyle sports that essentially have no rules. And there are plenty of people walking around the street that want to put rules on you, or they feel like it's their duty to let you know that this isn't supposed to be done here. Despite the fact that you're not harming anybody, you're not putting anybody else out, and most of the time you're only doing any damage to yourself.
Yeah, but I mean, if I look at the snowboarding, the urban snowboarding, yeah, it doesn't look very damaging. It looks damaging to your body when you fall down.
Right.
But it doesn't look like it's probably hurting. And most people are not out at night in the wintertime anyway, but skateboarding, I mean, it does like mess up park, you know, concrete areas, and it makes them dirty, and it makes a lot of noise, and so people do get kind of mad about that. I mean, how do you guys feel about that, Chris?
You know what makes a lot of noise is people getting in trouble for doing drugs and car wrecks from people drinking and driving and all these other things. What doesn't make as much noise philosophically is kids trying to do something positive and active. And that's what we're trying to do. That's what we've always taken the stance of, is that, hey, we're out. Yes, we might have chipped up the curb, but have you seen what the snow plows do to the curbs? You know, in reality, is this a huge ordeal for your life that you walk by and the curb is a little bit more brown than it used to be? Is that a huge problem, considering that you've got kids that are trying to stay into something positive and do something creative?
Okay. But I mean, that's, again, like, you're probably more likely to get chased off by the cops doing that than I would think the snowboarding. But what do you think?
It's the same. Probably, I'd say I almost get kicked out more snowboarding. You're there a lot longer snowboarding. It takes a lot longer to set up. And usually you're at night and you have the lights going. You got a big drop in built. You're just kind of an attraction. So I think that,
right, you got to use gravity, whereas with skateboarding trick, you could probably do it on a flat, right?
Yeah. And you're usually in and out pretty quick. Hopefully.
Yeah. So these skateboards are made for this kind of abuse to some extent, but snowboards, like, it seems like they would get ruined really fast, because you're like on metal and concrete and all kinds of stuff that's not snow.
Yeah.
So I mean Jason sells them, so I'm sure he thinks that's
probably
great.
Likes it, yeah.
Yeah, but Chris, I mean, like, it seems like that'd get pretty expensive and be kind of an issue for folks who are doing this.
Yeah, it definitely ruins them. A lot of people have like a street only board that takes the abuse, but, you know, some of these guys get free boards to do this, and stuff like that. So the support really helps there.
Yeah. So there's some sponsorship going on.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's a whole area of snowboarding. It's a whole genre of snowboarding, and that's addressed by manufacturers.
So they're making really, really sturdy.
Will make boards more in that direction with features to help them last a little bit longer and take that abuse.
Yeah. Cool. So tell me about the economics of this, because I know that there's, you know, plenty of skateboarders who like become huge stars, right? And who really get a lot of sponsorship and make money out of it. Anchorage is a fairly small town, small market. How does this work? Is it just for fun, or does it have an economic aspect to it, Jason?
Well, I would say that the one thing I learned through my years of sponsorship in snowboarding is that whenever you're being sponsored, you're essentially a marketing tool. I was given product and salary to promote a product, and when a company feels like you're no longer worth that promotion, then they let you go, and that's kind of how it works all down the levels. So when these kids get sponsored by a local rep for the snowboard company, they're looking to have that person shine in their regional area and bring people into the stores that are local there, buy those products, so that benefits the rep and therefore the vendor overall. And then that works up the chain as they move into being sponsored by the actual vendor themselves. They're looking to get that kind of exposure on a national level. For myself as a shop, most of it is based out of we just love to make videos and put those out. Nobody's getting rich over here. We do hope that it brings exposure to the shop and that brings more people in so that we can continue to fund keeping the doors open and therefore doing cool stuff.
And you have a team that's associated, or a community that's associated with the shop, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And so Chris started on our team as a snowboarder, and then he transitioned into pretty much taking the role of being our media person there. So he's essentially one of two members on our Blue and Gold media team, and he puts together edits constantly. Whenever we bring a new team rider onto the team, he films them, he puts some clips together, then we can use that to market that person and promote them. And then that leads up to the trailers for the video on a regular basis. All these things are part of what it takes nowadays to market your company. So I need constant visual stimulation for my audience, and Chris helps provide a ton of that.
Right. So Chris, in terms of how that connection with potential customers for Jason actually occurs, a local guy is being seen basically on YouTube videos, or is he actually just being seen out in the street and people are sort of just aware of what he's up to?
I think both of that, and Instagram, Facebook, all that social media is pretty big now.
Is it mostly like clips that you would produce so that those could be put online and people will share them? I mean, and so the kind of the wilder, the more interesting or more beautiful the clip is, then more broadly it's going to be shared?
Yeah. Yeah, we try and keep, you know, sometimes we'll film things just for Instagram or stuff like that, and then we'll have the stuff that we want to save for the big project, you know, for the full video.
Hold it back, yeah.
Yeah.
Realistically, the video he's making is almost what you would consider a throwback to an earlier time. Now things have moved to a state of immediacy with your Instagram and your Facebook. But people want constant content, and they want it now, and they want it all the time. So the older model, when I grew up, was all the video companies, the major video companies, would put out one video a year. There was no leaking of clips, or there was no real way to leak the clips or anything like that, really. Yeah. Short of putting out a trailer like you saw in the middle of the season to get people excited, and then those videos would come out in the fall, everybody would go snowboard and get hyped up, and then you would start your season. Now you have people doing web series, so it'll be weekly or monthly put onto websites. Their Instagram clips are constant,
I mean, you're always on your phone and you're always waiting for something to come up, right? And it seems like, I mean, if it's in Anchorage and if it's a recognizable spot, that's going to be a lot more interesting,
right?
Rather than something national. Okay, cool. This is so eye-opening. I knew nothing about most of this stuff. Outdoor Explorer, my guests are Jason Borgstead, who's with the Blue and Gold Board Shop and Chris Marshall, filmmaker of the new boarding film Evoke. So, Chris, one of the things that strikes me about this is that you, especially in this like social media world where it's always, you know, new, that you've kind of got to be constantly upping your game or coming up with something people haven't seen before, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that seems, both on one hand, it seems like really difficult, and on the other hand, it seems like potentially, are you tempted to push the envelope in terms of danger farther and farther because of that?
Yeah, I think you're always pushing it, and there's some rules out there as far as you can't do the same trick that somebody's done before on that same spot and all that kind of stuff. So you're constantly trying to up it.
Is that difficult? I mean, because it seems like.
Yeah, especially for spots that have been around for a long time. So you're also always trying to find new spots. I mean, every time you drive around.
So you're looking for, where could I do something that's crazy?
It's never been done, yep.
But you must at some point, on some of those, think like, somebody could die, you know? I'm not going to do that. That's too dangerous. I mean, because that has happened in Anchorage, right? I mean, some people, maybe not on a snowboard, but I mean, there have been fatalities from people trying to do tricks.
Yeah.
I remember in particular one down by, is it on I Street, down by the Chester Creek? That was quite a while ago. But it's a kid trying to come down that staircase. You know, Jason, is this?
That doesn't ring a bell with you.
It may have been
but
really
we did
long time
lose
ago.
A great guy that started the Zach's Boardroom. He was holding onto a car and being pulled on a skateboard and suffered a head injury, and the community lost a good person in that. And
yeah.
But those are, I think, risks that are accepted by most people that enter this lifestyle of board sports, you know, and because we all can make that decision where to take it. You know, the general person that just wants to enjoy snowboarding on the weekend, cruising down the hill, doesn't have to put their life at risk. And
right.
And other people who are interested in pushing their limits as far as possible happily take that risk and say, you know, if I do go, I'm going to go doing what I love, and that's all I can ask for in life.
Well, I get that, and I think that for a lot of our listeners, that's a part of the adventure of Alaska, is like, you know, I'm prepared to accept risk, and it's mine, and that's sort of part of the Alaska ethos. I mean, the thing that's always troubled me a little bit is when there's money attached to it. Like, and well, if you do a bigger, you know, in the sort of ski film world, you know, bigger air, got to go even bigger because there's money attached to it. And I don't know, is that something that you feel exists here, where like I got to push it farther because I really want to get that endorsement?
That's the absolute tip top of the level, and that's probably not even for the film. More so, that would be say a Red Bull athlete that wanted to do a particular project, and their companies were funding that project because they wanted to push that limit. But that's a personal limit.
Right.
I don't really see most of the skaters and snowboarders doing those things based solely on money. Money is a nice byproduct that might come from them doing that. The guy who jumped from, you know, did the skydiving from outer space,
right?
That Red Bull guy who dropped out of that, I don't think he did that thinking about all the money he was going to make. He wanted to do something that nobody else had done.
Right,
He wanted to break new ground in life, and as human beings we have that in us, and we just might be lucky if we get to a point where that becomes our job and puts the bread on the table.
And that's kind of what doing new tricks is about, isn't it? And like, it's new, nobody did it before.
Yep.
So where are you taking this next, Chris? What's the next step?
We've already started filming for another video, so probably like a month ago or
trying to put together another like year-long project.
Yeah.
So you see doing this like one every year?
Hopefully.
Yeah.
For as long as we can.
And meanwhile, you're also doing just the individual little short ones for Instagram and that kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, and a lot of times those just come naturally while you're filming for the real video. You'll get some B-roll stuff out of that you can put online, stuff like that.
Yeah.
When we're doing this year-long projects, and as we talked about people wanting constant content, the way to keep them excited for that coming event at the end of the year is these constant trailers that Chris puts together. And, I mean, it really falls in his lap to find new creative angles, find ways. As a filmmaker, he has 2 minutes or so, approximately, 2 to 4 minutes to present somebody's whole personality to the public and their skill set. To paint an accurate picture of that person and their struggles and their essentially life they've spent for a year working on something in a 4-minute process that you can, that anybody can watch and understand better that person's journey along the path.
Yeah, it sounds really cool. It sounds like something our listeners would really want to get into in terms of links that we can share on outdoorexplorer.org from the board shop and from the folks who are doing this. So how big is this community, Jason? I mean, like it's all, sounds like it all revolves a bit around your shop. I mean, do you feel like it's
wish.
A lot of it.
I don't know. I mean, it would be nice. What I felt, I grew up in these days of a shop called Borderline, and I did feel like that shop was the focal point of the boarding community.
And that's always been your goal, to recreate that.
Yeah, my goal is to have a place where people can feel stoked to share their love of skating or snowboarding with other people, and that we try to bring those people together through our events, skating events, snowboarding events, through our speaking engagements, through these videos. That's the important part for us, is to have this place that can be the gathering spot, both physically and philosophically, you know, that we can say, hey, there's an event over there that Blue and Gold's putting on. Our friends from over here will be there. Let's all go there and meet up and enjoy being stoked on snowboarding. You know, that's the base of what we're trying to recreate that Borderline put forth.
And you're welcoming other people's videos to come into to what you're doing, even if they're not part of your team.
Yep. And there's a lot of, you know, we have like the kind of like a core group of people that are filming for the video, but there's always friends and friends of friends that are out with us, and you know, we'll film anybody, and hopefully they can get a clip in the friend section. There's like a 4.5-minute section in the video that's just friends.
Cool.
Yep.
So this is a video that is like, how can people get access to it? Jason, is it like something you can get online, or is it like just
come to the shop? We're going old school.
That's crazy.
Yeah, we're going old school. So VHS tapes. No, I'm just kidding. We're going to do DVD copies. DVD copies, and they will be available at the shop, I believe, early next week.
And we're pre-recording, so they're probably there by now when you're hearing this.
That's how we're going to roll with it. And then next year we'll look to make an even more enhanced DVD offering. You know, these videos realistically are more about our community, about Alaska and about Alaskans, and we can share that outside, but primarily it's for our group, and so we prefer that format. To be able to pass it along, to have this physical thing that represents what you did, rather than a link that can be clicked and essentially discarded in a moment. It's nice to have that physical copy of something.
Well, congratulations on completing it. Thanks for being here today. Jason Borgstead, owner of Blue Gold Board Shop, thanks for being here.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Chris Marshall, filmmaker who made this new film, Evoke, which is available from Jason's shop, and we'll have the trailer online at outdoorexplorer.org. Thanks for being here, Chris.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
That's all for today's show. I'd like to thank my earlier guest, Lieutenant Colonel Steve Wilson, who's the director of the Alaska National Guard Biathlon Program, and Tag Nakata, who's a member of the National Guard Biathlon team. In the middle of today's show, we heard poetry by Ali Warren, coming to us from Poetry Now and the WFMT radio network in Chicago. Our producer for Outdoor Explorer is Eric Bork. Assistant producer helps line up the guests is Hannah Duro. My name is Charles Wolforth. I'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal the Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and on iTunes. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.